Hello, rap fans. It's Richard Herring here. Thank you for listening to my podcasts, powered by Acast Plus. Do tell your friends if you think they might enjoy them too. And do come and see me on tour in my show, Can I Have My Ball Back? Go to richardherring.com/ballback/tour for all tour dates, going to lots of places in the UK. Some extra gigs added in London at the Leicester Square Theatre and the Bloomsbury Theatre. The Leicester Square Theatre first gig is very nearly sold out, so do rush along to those shows, London, if you want to come along. Some of the shows selling fantastically well, some of them selling pretty badly. Hello, Swindon. Do you know I'm coming to your town? Please buy some tickets. And I do have to give a trigger warning. I've done the show only a few times and 6 men have passed out. After the bit where I explain what happens to you during an operation for testicular cancer. So, are you man enough to handle my balls? Only come if you are, have lots of balls and are not scared of balls. There is some mild testicle trauma involved in this story of testicular cancer. It's mainly funny, though, and if you don't come, that means you're scared to come and I'm going to judge you, so... It's like going on a fairground ride, so do come along. It's going to be very exciting to see if you make it through. I'll give you a badge if you make it through unscathed. Anyway, come and see the tour, richardherring.com for all that news. Some great Rahulastapas coming up, I have to tell you, in the next few weeks. The tour was a lot of fun. Thanks very much to everyone who came. Sit back, relax, and enjoy my stupid fucking podcast.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hi there, it's me, Richard Herring. Welcome to Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast with this week's guest, John Robbins. It's a really good one. If you haven't heard of him, then you'll like him. And if you have, you'll be delighted, as I know a lot of people have been looking forward to this one. Happy New Year. And if you like these podcasts and want to contribute and help us make some more, then go and give a tiny amount of money, or a lot if you like, at gofasterstripe.com/badges. You can make a one-off donation for no badge. You can get a badge for a tiny amount of money, or if you want to give us money every month, like £1 a month or more if you like, then all that money will go to making stuff like a video version of As It Occurs to Me. We're trying to build up enough money to make that, or any other podcast that we can put the money towards if we can't afford to do that. And every month you get entered into a prize draw. There's also like a secret channel of extras, like the backstage interviews and all sorts of other little bits and pieces that I'll put up there. But it's just coming up, if you're listening to this as it's released, to New Year. And there's always a special prize New Year draw where I give away loads of stuff. I haven't quite selected all the prizes yet, but one of the prizes will be a Garmin smartwatch that I bought earlier in the year and then didn't like all that much. So I got an Apple Watch instead, which is all right as well, but not that. It's not worth it unless you really are doing a lot of exercise and stuff. Anyway, this Garmin smartwatch, worth £200 on the open market, brand new, and worn by me and sweated into by me, could be yours, plus some scripts and other bits and pieces of rarities. So if you fancy winning, chances of winning those, and the odds are quite good, there aren't. It's better than the lottery. GoFasterStripe.com/badges. You will also, of course, as I say, get that secret channel. You'll get a badge. And you get an email that every now and again that other people don't get, giving you secret advice about future guests and such like. Anyway, have a great 2016. It can't be worse than 2015, can it? Come on, 2016, do your worst. Yes, I hope you enjoy this. Thank you for listening. Sorry I talked for a long time. Some of you will have skipped forward and have missed me saying bum. Sha.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. He's like a caterpillar who's changed into a butterfly in front of your eyes. Please welcome Richard Herring. Thank you very much. Hello, hello. Welcome to Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. Or I was down at Big Al's on Happy Days in the bath in the 1950s there. I was in the toilet in there. And a man came in wearing a leather jacket, and he was calling Rahulastapa. So I don't know if that's an indication of anything. I'm feeling quite good today. You know, it's difficult. I've been kind of ill through a lot of these, or just tired because I've got a stupid fucking baby. God, it's annoying. It was fun to begin with, and then fucking hell, it just never ends. Blood, grow up. That's what I... She was trying to feed her with a cup today. It's going all over her. Stupid idiot. But I'm feeling quite good today. I live in Shepherd's Bush at the moment still. As many of you know, the house is for sale. If anyone wants to... Still for sale. For no one... It's a beautiful place. I don't know, because the Westfield is there at Shepherd's Bush. I don't know if you were reading the papers this week, but a pregnant woman gave a blowjob to her husband in the Westfield, in a public area of the Westfield. She was pregnant, and her kids were also around, and they were walking up to her. This happened in Shepherd's Bush. This is the classiest thing that's ever happened in Shepherd's Bush. The kids were around, and they didn't stop doing the blowjob, and then the woman, when she'd finished the blowjob, she spat her husband's gametes into a tissue and threw them behind a pot plant. And that is... And on the day this news came out, I went to the Westfield in the hope of seeing... Or getting involved, you know, because I think if that starts happening, if a kid can walk up and they're still getting in, if just a man sort of sidled up and sat. I thought that might happen. There's a lot of more people at the Westfield than there usually would be on a Friday. That's all I'm saying. I was very disappointed not to say that. But I think the Westfield, I've got no evidence for this. I think they might have planted that story in an attempt to get more people to come to, in the run up to Christmas. Because, you know, it's tempting to go down. Because if you like to see a pregnant woman give her husband a blowjob, that's good for you. If you like the idea that it might happen to you. Or if you just like giving blowjobs to strangers, that is the place. It's the place to go. So come and buy my house in Shepherd's Bush if you want to see that. Look, we're going to crack straight on. So my first guest, and my only guest this week. Can't wait till next week's show. He's probably best known for his instructional internet-only video for the Carling Beer home draft system. Sadly, that is true. This is John Robbins, ladies and gentlemen. Here he comes. Hopefully, yeah, there he is. John Robbins, sit down. There's a microphone. You speak into that, like, and that's.
Hello, everyone.
That's how that works. How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you.
So you're looking at me so young.
I'm looking at you so
no,
young.
No, you look at him. You're so young. You're a very young man.
I did a run-through for a non-broadcasted thing.
Yeah.
And it was me and Simon Evans and two other comedians, and they referred to us as the old-timers. And I sort of accidentally...
Well, Simon Evans is an old-timer. You were born in... You know, I was working on my O-levels when you were born in Bristol.
Yeah, 1982.
Yeah. Probably, maybe, yeah, just choosing which O-levels I was going to do. It just makes me sad the way that time passes. So everyone would want to talk about, would want to know about your instructional video was it for Carling
Home? Yeah.
What happened in that? What was that? Can we see that still online?
No, it's unavailable.
Okay.
Which shows that they were wrong to trust a sort of a freelance producer who knew me from outside comedy.
Right.
Who wanted to put together a video of how to use... It's like a keg that you could put in a fridge.
Yeah.
And...
Was it that complicated that it needed an online video? Because that doesn't sound...
Well, they had three kegs for us to use.
Yeah.
And I got the first two wrong.
Okay.
So that they sprayed over a camera. So that immediately... It was one of those things when I was just sort of starting out, so it was more money than I would earn for a gig, but phenomenally low for what you would expect. And so the damage of the camera was more than my fee. And then the third one got right. But I had to drive to a gig, and I was worried I didn't want to drink, actually physically imbibe the Carling. And so I kept having to sort of sip and then, like the lady in Westfield, just sort of spit it out and pop it into a pot plant. That could be like a version of... I've only just today seen the John Lewis Christmas advert.
Yeah.
But there could be a version of that for the Westfield, where it's CCTV of that happening, of the couple in the shopping centre, and then it just ends with the same hashtag, remind someone they're loved. By giving them a blowy in a shopping centre. Yeah. If you went into a shopping centre, you or me or one, a man, and around did that yourself with kids around, you'd be arrested and...
What, if you masturbated in the Westfield and children were coming up and touching your knee and going, no, look out from... Yeah, you would probably be arrested for that. And they were arrested and they've been charged.
So no, they were let off with... They got a suspended sentence. She said her hormones were all over the place.
Yeah.
And if I said that... I just come, I'm just a mess. I mean, it's up and down and...
Well, there are times, you know. When you're younger, your hormones are all over the place and you need to have... But you'd probably go in the toilet there. There's plenty of toilet facilities at the Westfield. I would suggest they could have gone into a disabled loo. And it's not. I'm not advocating that. But if you if your hormones are all over the place in a way, you are disabled. So.
Well, why they should have...
And if, or if you just really want a blowjob...
Or they should have actual booths for specifically for that in all places where there are more than 10 shops.
Yeah. Well, now they've got, coming up at the Westfield, they've got a Christmas grotto. So you could put the kids in there and then you could go back. And actually, I don't know why they've done this, but they have genuinely put a Shrek in the Christmas grotto. They have. I don't know if that's a homage to me. Because it's not like... Shrek isn't a Christmas thing, right? So it's like Father if you go into a Christmas grotto, can I see Father Christmas? I don't want to see a Shrek. I mean, I do, but I mean, kids don't want to see. Or I hope Father Christmas is there as well as a Shrek.
What if it was a Shrek dressed as Father Christmas?
Yeah, I fear that is what it is, and that to me is an abomination against against both Christianity and the lore of Shrek.
What religion does Shrek most identify with?
Well, it's an ogre-based... You know, I don't know if the ogres believe in that they were... They're kind of fantastical creatures in themselves, aren't they? Mm. If you live in a fantastical world, it must be hard to believe in a god. There are already fairies and elves and stuff in it, and magical... There's definitely a leprechaun in there, because there's... what's his name? Is it Leprechaun, the guy in Shrek 3?
Well, it's difficult, is it? Because it,
there's that little gingerhead guy who steals his life.
It's a sort of...
The Leprechaun. Come on! Is there no one... Rumpelstiltskin, that's who it is. Yeah, he's kind of a Leprechaun, isn't he?
But you need to impose sort of self... you need to impose rules in fantasy worlds.
Yeah.
Because, obviously, if you can have anything, then it's hard to have narrative. So, like, with... Harry Potter, which I'm a big fan of, there's often points where you just go, why didn't you just use a spell? And there's one spell that would have solved every problem in Harry Potter, which is like Axio, which is where you say Axio broomstick and your broomstick comes to you. So in theory, every single dilemma they have could be like Axio Dumbledore.
Yeah.
Or... You know, Axio, the one thing that will help me now. So you have to impose your own sort of code as to, in a magical world, as to what... So God, you might say, couldn't exist in a fantastical... Well,
or maybe all the gods exist in this world, because, I mean, the Shrek universe, I'm not sure the original Shrek books are the case, but certainly the films... Oh, and I'm not going to talk about this exclusively...
But haven't they recently...
But in the Shrek films, I mean, any fairy... I mean, like Rumpelstiltskin and the Gingerbread Man do not exist in the same universe.
Did they... Are there any sort
of... The Three Little Pigs, they're not in the same universe. But in Shrek, they are, so presumably Zeus is there.
Are there any of the original sort of DVDs of Shrek from 2,000 years ago that are sort of like the extant texts, like the Dead Sea Scrolls... You could have the sort of found in a cave.
The original Shrek film is quite old.
But like a sort of what do they call them? The apocryphal.
Yeah, the apocryphal testaments.
So
if
there's some apocryphal Shreks. Well,
because Shrek himself, as I feel, has become the figurehead of Shreks. And he's just one of the Shreks.
Yeah.
And, you know, any Shrek. A lot of the Shreks who aren't in Shrek feel quite aggrieved that Shrek is... And similarly to Jesus, I imagine, there were a lot of messiahs at the time. They must be... If they can see, look down, they must be pissed off going, well, I was as good as Jesus doing all that stuff. Why are they going on about him all the time?
There's a good book by Philip Pullman called... The Good Man Jesus and the Scoundrel Christ, which sort of posits an alternative gospel where Jesus has a brother.
Yes.
And he takes all the credit for the stuff his brother does. There's also a really good story by Borges, which is impossible to say that without sounding like an absolute cunt.
You did. You succeeded in
it's by Borges, actually, guys. But where it's where Judas is actually the person in the New Testament that makes the ultimate sacrifice and saves mankind.
Yeah.
Because without him condemning himself to death, Jesus wouldn't have been sent to the court and wouldn't have been killed.
Exactly. So, yeah. Of course.
So that's good.
It was good. Should we owe Judas a big? A lot of thanks, because Jesus was all right anyway, wasn't he? His dad was God.
Yeah, he would have been fine.
He was fine anyway.
He'd have gone on to work in the company or whatever.
They'd have sorted it out. But I mean, in a lot of these stories in the Bible, God kind of needs the person. Like Adam and Eve, God needs Eve to eat the apple. Otherwise, it's just him looking at two naked people in a garden. And that is that's back at the Westfield, really. So anyway, let's talk about you a little bit. And then we'll get back to Shrek for the last 35 minutes and our theories about Shrek. You are a very good stand-up comedian. I call you a young stand-up comedian.
Thanks, man.
That's all right. Because I'd kissed a girl by the time you were alive, and so that means... I probably hadn't, actually.
There's a comedian now
who
I gave... Elliot Steele, who I gave a lift back from a gig, and I'd had Congress with a lady before he was born.
Wow.
Which is terrifying.
You must have had Congress very young, though, whereas I was quite... For me, that pushes the ramp a lot further back. I saved myself with the collusion of all the women in the world who agreed. You're a Bristol boy,
yes.
Which is why I like you. So maybe born in the same hospital as my nephew in Bristol.
I was born in Southmead Hospital.
I don't remember what it was. I remember them in hospital.
Right, yeah, so it's probably the same.
Probably was. And you lived with a lot of comedians, you've gone on to be... You had shared a flat in Bristol.
Yeah, I lived with a lot of comedians who I don't really know what they're up to now.
Yeah.
But I think one of them does a blog or something. I lived with Russell Howard.
Oh, yeah.
John Richardson and Mark Olver.
Mark Olver from the Deal or No Deal warm-up.
Which I've been sacked from twice.
Have you? Yeah. Did they forget that they sacked you when they...
They got very desperate and, called me... what happened was they asked me to go back, and I always used to dread it because you have to watch 3 episodes of Deal or No Deal... unedited. Like 3 episodes of No Deal or No Deal on TV for 45 minutes is one thing, but some of them would take 2.5 hours of people basically thinking their life was going to change because it was horrible because you'd see people convince themselves that they deserved money and happiness, which everyone does, but because it's random, it sort of falls equally to people who really... I saw... the worst one was this guy whose life story was just harrowing. And he had all the big numbers, the big power 5, were in play. And then they didn't show this in the show, but one of the contestants dropped a box. It opened they saw the amount. So they had to then swap all the boxes round. And the next 5 numbers were the big ones. And he ended up with like 10p. And you're like, why do this to anyone? And so, but the first time I got sacked was for making a joke about Noel. / being disinterested in the show. I'm convinced it was because I made a joke about Noel, but I think they might say it was because I used to roll my eyes every time they asked me to do any work. And the second time is because I was so hungover that I was sick in Noel's toilet, which is not a euphemism. And he has his own toilet, which is fair enough, because he needs to go and come back, and he's an astonishing professional. Yeah. I've never seen anyone deal with a live TV like he
or
does.
Or not deal with them.
Or not deal, yeah. And I anyone would have been sacked in that. I was just being sick. It's the only time I've ever been sick the morning after drinking.
Was Noel Edmonds in the toilet at the time doing a poo?
No, he was.
Is it a really tiny toilet? Is that why
he has
his
disabled
own
toilet?
Is it?
Yeah.
Don't approve of that. Don't approve of Noel Edmonds having the disabled toilet.
Well, there were other disabled toilets. No disabled people had access to this toilet anyway.
That's absolutely wrong.
They wouldn't have been able to get in there.
Let's go and pick it, deal or no deal, with lots of disabled people and say, we want Noel's tiny loo.
He loves disabled people.
No, I'm sure he does.
In an entirely good way. There was one time, it was remarkable, there was someone in the audience, because they have sort of these devoted fans, and one guy had obviously learning difficulties quite severe and made involuntary noises throughout the record, which sort of was very difficult for them to deal with. Noel was fantastic, and he's sort of made a point of showing the camera, so introducing himself, saying, hello, we've got a very special person in the audience, and there may be involuntary noises, but don't feel awkward. It was just wonderful. Yeah. The staff backstage were not using such kind language. Like, there were producers going, someone's going to get fired for this.
Right.
Because they let... Well, they used language that's not very PC, Richard.
I can understand why they don't want you back.
And I'm happy with that decision as well.
It's a hard job, though. Mark is fantastic as a warm-up. He does phenomenal. a lot of those shows. He does Pointless as well.
Yeah.
So what was the flat like? Was it always funny in the flat with all these funny people? Did you think of inviting Justin Lee Collins to be part of the flat at any point? Or was he deliberately ostracised?
This was pre his crisis.
Yeah.
I met him once. I've never, ever met anyone like him. Just so accommodating and friendly. So this is before any of these people involved were very famous, but I went for tapas with Russell Howard, Justin Lee Collins and Alan Carr. Right. And it was in Bristol. And I turned up, and I was a sort of an open spot amateur comic. And I knew all these. Obviously, Alan Carr was a big deal to me and Justin Lee Collins. And I went in and sat down, and Justin Lee Collins had never met me before, didn't know me from Adam, but immediately like, oh, you're John, are you all right there, John? You got some of this tapas? Get some of that butter, John. You will love that butter. And some of that bread, I want to see you eat two bits of that bread with some of that butter. We've got asparagus. It's white asparagus, but I still trust it. And immediately just felt, made me feel welcome. But there was a sort of, this is pre his issues he had, but I did get a sense from him that whenever no one was expecting him to be on form, he sort of would go back into a bunker of his mind.
Right.
And his sort of face would, if you caught him when no one was looking at him, you would sense that he was sad, which I think turned out to be the case.
It was.
And may not now be.
Did he make you write what other meals tapas you'd had with other comedians down in the pucker patch? I was just there. I liked about that route, that I'm not. Well, the thing I enjoyed about that court case was that she kept referring to her as a puck, not a notepad, but as a pucker pad, as if she'd been sponsored by. Because that's an odd thing to say. He writes everything down in a pucker pad. He writes everything down. Is all you need to say. You don't need to specify the brand.
Yeah.
I don't know if pucker pad had sponsored her to.
But I love that. I love it when people sort of needlessly mention brands. It's quite a sort of Alan Partridge thing to do. He's being quite focused on all the brand names.
Oh, well.
But it was quite funny, flat in different ways as well.
Yeah.
They're all because
John Richardson is notoriously OCD about. Well, he did lots of routines about being OCD about the things being in the right cutlery drawer and all that sort of thing.
Yes,
was that true to form, or was he?
It was true to a certain extent. Obviously, we would tease him whenever he showed signs of not having OCD, because we were like, oh well, it's all just a load of bullshit. You've left a spoon over there. So in a way, we sort of forced him to maintain a level of OCD far above that which he naturally had, in order that we didn't think he was a phony.
Yeah.
And Russell, you couldn't really pick a worse person to live with if you had OCD than Russell, because he would, in a very charming way, if you complained that he had left a bowl of ricicles on the floor, which would be a daily occurrence, or he would go, "I'm Russell Howard," which is wouldn't be funny for him to do now, but because he wasn't famous then, is a really funny thing to do. "I'm Russell Howard, deal with it." And Oliver, I started drinking in that again. I gave up drinking before the week before my first ever gig,
right?
And it was in that house that I started drinking again because of John Richardson's cooking. Because he made a lamb shank and had some white wine with it, and I had some white wine. I thought, I haven't had a drink for a year and a half. I'm allowed to treat myself with a drink. And then their careers took off, and I think he knew, in a way, that it was the way to sort of stop me sort of progressing quite as fast was to make me, sort of turn me back into an alcoholic for 10 years.
Right. You've stopped drinking again now? Or do you drink a bit now?
I stopped again in...
This morning.
I stopped again in 2010, I think, for a year. And then I stopped again 2 months ago after... meeting, you know, I did a gig with you. Yeah. No, I did a gig with you and Sarah and Adam Buxton.
Yes.
And I had such a... I was just... one of those days that you think I'm so lucky to do what I do, because I'd done a wonderful gig and the gig was great, and I'd met Adam Buxton, who's a bit of a hero of mine, and he was really lovely, and we had a long chat about music. And then I got really drunk and went home and found myself in front of a mirror kind of berating myself for being awful. And then you kind of think, what on earth are you doing, you weird idiot? You've had a lovely day. Yeah. And I thought, well, I need to stop this for a while then. And then that lasted 3 weeks. And now I'm fine again, okay. I think. I hope. I don't know. I got very sad the other night, so if my girlfriend hears this, she will debate that.
Yeah. It's difficult as a comedian because, you know, I've been through... I like drinking, and I've been through times when I drink a lot and times when I stop drinking. And I'm drinking again at the moment a bit. But, you know, it's difficult because it's always there, and it's very easy to... You can perform. Do you perform with drinking?
And that's sort of a rule I am really glad I have, is that I very rarely... I'll never drink before I go on stage, unless it's like a late-night gig in Edinburgh and I've had a couple of pints or something. And sometimes if I'm hosting a show, I'll have a drink, like, as I've brought on the last act.
Yeah.
And very occasionally, if I know the setting is appropriate, I will sort of let myself have a few too many drinks. But I'm glad I'm not a comic who can go on drunk. Because, this is what Russell Howard said about it, which I agree with, which is that A, it sort of blunts your sword.
Yeah.
And B, sort of people pay money to see you do your job. So it's unfair of you to relax before you've provided the service that they are paid for.
Yeah.
And it's not fair if people have one night a week where they can come and relax and enjoy themselves for you to sort of be enjoying yourself in that way.
No, I agree. And weirdly, I don't have a drink before a gig, but at that gig I did with you, I did. Because it was an afternoon gig at a festival.
Yeah.
And we were out with my wife and daughter came, and it just felt like, oh, this is so lovely, and there was beer. And I probably drank 3 beers before I went on. And it was really... I felt... I was so drunk. And it was like 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And it was... But it was terrifying because I realised I wasn't in control at all. And sometimes I enjoyed being on stage and losing control and not knowing what I'm going to say, which is what I mainly do in this podcast. But if I'd had 3 beers, we could talk about some terrible things.
Well, I think there's this, in a sense, that it's better for you to be drunk if you can make a thing of that than it is for you to be had 2 pints and just be crap at your job.
Yeah.
Because it puts your brain and your mouth about a second out of sync.
Well, you can't react, but also it is just that feeling of slight, oh, I'm slurring words slightly, or you can't quite tell, and I can't remember what's coming up next. So it's a slight tip. Don't do it, kids. Don't drink. Don't try to be like me and be... There's a lot of kids out here who look up to me, especially at home. So don't ever drink, or you'll end up like, and you won't. If you like me, don't drink because I say so. If you don't like me, don't drink, or you'll end up like me. So now we're cut. You'd mentioned your girlfriend, who's also a stand-up comedian. Do you get annoyed about people asking you if you're funny all the time and who gets the routines when you have a joke happen between the two of you? I'm married to a comedian as well.
Yeah, my girlfriend is Sarah Pascoe, comedian. And I don't really get annoyed about that because it doesn't really happen that often that we get sort of either spoken to as a couple. And she's very careful about... So we did one thing for The Independent before Edinburgh about couples who are comedians. And
we did as well.
And it was really sort of a lesson for me in being careful about what you say. Well, not what I say, it's what the lady who wrote it said. It was a very good article, but the danger is what your partner says on stage about you gets conflated with you.
Yeah.
So Sarah has a routine about men wanting sex less than women at a certain age because male sexual peak is 18 and women's is 30s. So if you then take that person in that routine to be me, you end up with a sentence in the Independent, which is, Sarah Pascoe is more than happy to talk about her boyfriend's low sex drive. And you're like, my mum's going to read that, and that's currently my only quote from The Independent. So, so it's I think with a couple more, the sort of fictions and realities of when you talk about your partner become a bit blurred, and people do assume it's all word for word true.
You both did shows the same year, sort of about the relationship. Is that?
Yeah. Well, the show I was writing when I met Sarah was about. Sort of nostalgia and the past, and about an experience with a girl at a music festival, which was an odd beginning for our relationship, that I was agonising over a show about sort of the one that got away.
Right.
So then the next year, our relationship had progressed to the point at which I was writing a show about how sort of about love and how it's sort of useless as a subject for comedy, which means sort of, I think there was a line in it when I said, you know, as much as my girlfriend is the answer to every question I've ever asked of the world, comedically, she's cancer. And the ideal scenario would be if she died about mid-Feb. giving me a satisfactory ending for the show. So we do struggle at times, very occasionally, about things that we hear each other say on stage. Or in interview, once she said something on a radio interview, which I had to sort of go, hey, my mum's yoga group heard you say something quite personal, because it was on Radio 4. And so there's a balance. But yeah. I would never, ever, you know, she has to feel she can speak to her experience of the world, which includes our relationship, and I have mine, so we respect that in each other. And it's very... I'm incredibly proud of her. And she has a determination and work ethic and an intelligence which constantly amazes me. And she's writing a book.
She's a phenomenon. In fact, at that gig, which was just, you know, I was thinking, oh, this is a fun festival gig and I'm going to get drunk, she was sitting at a table with about four notebooks working out what she was going to say. It made me think, oh, maybe I should work a bit harder. As a comedian.
It's astonishing. One of our minor domestic disputes is about how heavy her bag is, because it gives her a bad back. Because it's full of like eight notepads and two books she's reading and a laptop. But she can read. We once were in a hotel and I went to sleep early / passed out, depending on whose version of the story. And she was reading a book as she was going to sleep. It's about 11:30. And I woke up the next day / came round, depending on whose version of the story. And I said, oh, how was the book? And she went, oh, I finished it. And I was like, you finished it? What time did you get to bed? And she said, oh, about 5:00. I read another book afterwards. And she'd read another entire book after having read that book.
Crazy.
She can...
Is this because of your low sex drive, do you think?
Yeah. Well... little bit. She's writing.
And all the book, the pages are all ripped out and screwed up.
She's made a little sort of weird nest for herself, like a hamster amongst the book tearings. She's writing a book about the woman, the female body at the minute. So a lot of the books she reads are sort of on that topic. And we have, she will obviously need to express what she's read and sort of just vent. So we have a lot of chats over breakfast about female genital mutilation and rape and consent and child brides, which, you know, it just sets me up for the day.
And that show is available. You've got a couple of your shows available online as audio downloads from your website.
On Bandcamp, johnrobbins.bandcamp.com, and they're pay what you want. And you can have them for free. You can download them for free or set a price. And my last two shows are up there, and my current Edinburgh show will be up there at some point soon.
And so have you done, how many one-man shows have you done?
Seven.
God.
I haven't taken a year off yet.
No. It's good. I had a year off. It was great. Oh, mind you, I did 12 shows here, so it wasn't quite a year off, but it was pretty good. And in that, the same show about love, and you can also, if you like shows about love, I did one called What Is Love Anyway?
Yeah. Well, when did you do that?
That was before you, probably.
Was it?
Yeah.
Was it definitely before me?
I thought of the idea of doing a show about love.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Yeah, in 1981... Yeah, so, I'll do that.
While you were
kissing
a girl
for
the first
time. But it's about
time.
Meeting my wife and, you know, going from the life I had before. It's very, you know.
Well, mine's essentially the same.
It's the same theme, but it's a very different show. I don't think there's much crossover.
Compare them and let us know whose is best.
That'd be a good idea. You don't pay what you like for mine. Mine has a set price.
Right.
GoFasterStrike.com. But you're brave enough within that show to do a routine about Stuart Lee, which is not exactly flattering towards him.
No, I have not escaped the gaze of Sauron's eye. I obviously, like all comedians, had massive respect for Stu and a big fan. Yeah. And
not all comedians.
No, some. and so when he's sort of first began the routines about other comics, obviously it was the big chat topic in lots of dressing rooms and stuff, and a few things happened. I was quite in a difficult time preparing for my 2013 Edinburgh show, and did what I think a lot of people do. I think comics are this, but sort of writing thought pieces late at night on your laptop, which you intend, you're not really sure why they're there, and you're just glad that you didn't send them when you were drunk.
Yeah.
And about what I sort of thought about various things, and then I thought, well, I'll just, you know, I'll, if I have a point to make, it'd be nice to set myself the challenge of making it through stand-up and not online or not on Twitter or anything like that, because that, I don't think anything ever good has ever happened online. I don't actually agree with what I just said there at all. But so I thought I'd write a stand-up routine about, because I was writing about love and how happiness affects your persona as a comedian, because it's much more useful if you're angry, and postulated the idea that the more successful comedians become, the more miserable they have to pretend to be, which fitted nicely into a brief routine about Stuart Lee. And what I did in the set myself the challenge of doing that was to apply his logic to him, which I think is absolutely valid, and never once gave an opinion of him outside of that routine. And I like the routine, I stand by it. And he didn't react well. which is absolutely fine. But I quite like the idea that my only ever sort of thing I've ever said about him is in that routine, and you can listen to that routine, and that's, I'm glad that I made my point through that and not through some sort of snarky article or something.
I mean, it's an interesting thing, I think, comedically, because it's about becoming, you know, if you become successful and earn lots of money, it's, you know, that most comedians are starting from a point of being an underdog.
Mm.
And so if you, it's a difficult thing for anyone to then cope with suddenly becoming very successful and earning some money.
Yeah. And it's sort of just about inevitable, and this is not just limited to Stuart, but it's about the hypocrisy of how it's possible. The basic premise is, how is it possible to complain that you don't earn much money in front of 500 people? Because it's basic maths.
Yeah.
And it's sort of infuriating when you are genuinely fighting against an industry where you're fighting for yourself and your career to get a foothold in an industry, and then you hear one of the most successful people in that industry saying that it's hard for them, and you think, well, I don't think it is. I think things are going quite well.
I think it's very difficult for my generation to appreciate how difficult it is for your generation and then the even newer generation of comics. And I think if by going back and doing clubs, you get a better idea of it.
Yeah.
But it's there's so many people now, and we talked about this a bit, but like when we started doing Edinburgh in the late 80s, early 90s, there might be 50 comedians going up and doing a show, and now it's 700 or 800 comedians
doing
a show.
So. When you started, basically, it's just maths that everyone would win the Perrier.
It was.
Because
it was.
There were like 10 comics, and if they all went up to Edinburgh for 10 years, they'd all eventually just win the Perrier by default, because you can't win it twice.
Yeah.
So it was easier then.
It was easier.
But then
Stu or I ever got nominated for the Perrier, which is probably where a lot of the issues we both have.
But that's because you were sort of household name celebrities.
Well, not to begin with.
I think that the fact is that at whatever stage of your career you're at in a creative industry, because there is no, because there's no structured ladder to climb.
Yeah.
It's entirely nebulous, and the nature of improving as an artist is always to see the next rung, because you want to have a way of judging that you're getting better. So everyone, even the top big dogs, the super dogs of comedy, must think, oh, why didn't I get that?
Yeah, I think they do. I mean, that's been my new show, which is about happiness and whether it's possible to make comedy have happiness, which is a similar thing that you were talking about as well. It is about, you know, it's about real. I think it's very difficult to realise when you yourself have been successful.
Mm.
So I think that even if from an outside eye, you think, oh, God, you know, someone else would look at someone and go, they're doing amazingly well. Yeah, but I think the tendency is to go, oh, look, that's not fair. And I think that's within a lot of comedians. And they're always striving to go higher anyway.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, that's a dangerous spiral upwards or downwards you can get into, I think. So it's interesting. I liked that you did an interview with Bruce Dessau where he does his rarely asked questions. But the one I liked, you asked what annoyed you, and you said that your brain kind of keeps on making you think about certain things every time they happen.
Mm.
And you had one quite good example, which you remember what that was. Yeah,
it was that I read an interview in, I think, 1994 with Johnny Vaughan when he just started on The Big Breakfast, and he said, oh, how do you deal with the early mornings? And he said, the most important thing is just get in the shower as quickly as you can and it'll wake you up. And just for some reason, my brain selected that. And every time I've ever had a shower since 1993, which is like between one and two a day, depending on factors, I've thought about Johnny Vaughan.
Yeah.
And I don't dislike Johnny Vaughan, but if I had to pick someone to think about 10,000 times...
Saying one
when
thing.
I'm always naked... it's Johnny Vaughan, and I sort of, because there's that like question in the interview was what irritates you. So I started, it's that difficult thing with interviews when you're a comedian is that do you try and be funny or do you be serious?
Yeah.
And both have pros and cons. So I started trying to think of what are those things that really people find annoying these days? And then I realized that all of those things I do, and by definition, what annoys me most is me. Because I am the source of all my annoyances, and I'm the most annoying person I know, and I can't escape myself, and I have no time to myself because I'm always there. So I'm the most annoying person, and all my foibles and traits are what really get my goat.
I think it's an interesting observation. I don't know if that's true of everyone, because I have lots of things. But I have lots of little things like that every time I do them, I think of a certain thing.
Well, your brain makes connections between certain things.
But you sort of wonder, in the end, will they be the only things that are left with you? You know, it's like every time I make a cup of tea, which I don't do that often because I don't drink tea that much.
Right.
But I think of the advert that Mark Lamar did where he told you about how I'm putting less water in your kettle. I don't put less water in the kettle. I just think about that advert. Every time I do. Because it's so... Mark Lamar seems such an odd person to choose to do that message of ecology. And it's basically the last time I saw Mark Lamar on TV was him doing this, because he's chosen to go on the radio and do other stuff. Yeah. But it's like that was this, and it was such an odd advert. But every time I get, I think, oh yeah, so if you put a bit less water in the kettle, that would be better for.
And that will. You'll
but
never
I always,
stop thinking
yeah, I'll
about
never
that.
Stop thinking about
and
it.
And I've now had people come up to me and say, since I read your interview, every shower I've had, I've thought about you thinking about Johnny Vaughan in your shower. Not even in my shower. And now Johnny Vaughan does a show on the same station that me and Ellis do a show on, on Radio X. So if I ever meet him, if I ever met him, I would think about me stood in my shower thinking about the fact I think about Johnny Vaughan whenever I have a shower. So what if I went mad and started taking my clothes off in front of Johnny Vaughan?
And what if Johnny Vaughan and me said, oh, you're doing the breakfast show, I've got a tip for you.
And then I'd say, I know what this tip, and I would really mess with his brain. You're going to tell me to have a shower. He'd be like, I didn't know you were an old pro.
It's a weird thing. Like the other one, when I'm checking the blind spot, when I'm moving out into the centre lane in a motorway, like one of my girlfriends, old girlfriends, used to always quite exaggeratedly do it. And since then, I start exaggerating doing. That's the only time I ever think about her is every time. Like,
well, especially
but it's that one thing. You think that's what I mean. Like, about all the other things fall away. I can remember other things about the relationship, but that's almost the pervasive thing. Eventually, will that be it when it gets to the end of life? Go, how was that relationship? Oh yeah, she always looked over her shoulder. Like, when she checked. Very especially fastidious about checking the blind spot.
And driving's a difficult one because you are taught to make associations in your brain in order to learn to drive, so that every action you will have. So I had a thing with my driving instructor, who was quite scary, lady. Quite sort of shout at me, and I'm very good in if shouting is involved in anything. When you turn the indicator to indicate right, you would turn the wheel, and then on a modern car, there's a click, and what that click means is that when you straighten up the wheel again, the indicator will automatically turn off. However, sometimes the corner when you turn back isn't enough of a corner for it to then click, so I'd click it off with my hand, and she'd say, stop doing that, you're ruining, you're going to break the indicator mechanism. And I think about that every time I indicate. And I have done in the past 30,000 miles a year driving to gigs. In each drive, I'll probably have indicated, I don't know, hundreds, 50, between 50 and 100 times. And I always remember her telling me off. And the same thing happens if I ever put on the handbrake without pressing the little button in. And it goes, or kind of makes that noise. I'll hear her going, you're ruining my handbrake. Anyway, sorry. It's
good. I think it's an interesting... Does everyone have that, or is it just comedians? Everyone has it. So that's a good point. Not, well, one man said yes, and I've gone, there. Everyone has it. Really, for that to work, everyone would have had to say yes, wouldn't they? That, but that bloke's gone, yeah, they do. It's only mental people who have it, mate, I'm afraid. But good luck to us all. I've got to do some emergency questions. Yes, thank you. I've got some new ones. This is for you, Andy McCaich. If you had to go... He complained that it wasn't in last week's show. If you had to go for a week's holiday with one of the puppets from Spitting Image... Do you remember Spitting Image? Which would you choose? Bear in mind that your holiday would also be with whoever operated the puppet and whoever did the voice of the puppet, but they could never acknowledge you as themselves. They would always be in character. If you tried to interact with them as people, they would not. They would just blank you off. Right. They're not there.
I can and see also, them. Yeah, they're not always behind like a wooden thing. No,
they might try and hide a bit, but I think, you know, realistically on a holiday situation...
Would they be wearing that voice. Quite creepy black suit? Like all black...
Yeah, maybe the
like puppeteers
I think
wear.
The puppeteer guy would. The guy, the impressionist, might be in a booth... Might get sort up a little booth in the... Although he'd have to come around, but he'd have to be with you all the time. But I don't think he would dress up, because the impression...
So the puppeteer is there.
Yeah.
Operating it. And the person doing the voice of it...
Is around, but he wouldn't stand right there.
And he would be on the island as well.
He'd be on the holiday and in the room with you all the time. So he could, otherwise you'd be able to have a conversation with the puppet.
And where's the holiday?
Well, that is also one of the... The puppet would choose the holiday destination. And that is... And again, that is not... That's, I mean, obviously the impressionist would have some part in that, but he would have to work out where he thought the puppet would want to go on holiday.
Because what I'm seeing in this scenario is so many reasons why it would be absolutely awful for everyone involved. And the choice of the puppet is going to have no influence on that whatsoever. Because you're going to have probably, I don't know, Steve Coogan did a lot of the voices.
I mean, that'd be exciting, wouldn't it?
It would be exciting for me.
But you wouldn't be able to talk
to
him.
He would absolutely hate it because he'd only be able to talk to me through Roy Hattersley. And the puppeteer would hate it because he would have to... So they're not my friends. Do I have to spend all the time with them?
Yes.
But it's like a nightmare.
Puppet would you get the choice of puppet? might assuage the nightmare if it was a puppet. But remember, it would be 24 hours a day. I mean, when they're asleep, I don't know how that would work. They might have to have two puppeteers, one who operate the puppet when he was asleep.
Well, maybe they could... Swapping wouldn't help.
No.
So you've now got two voice artists and two puppeteers.
I think the same voice artist could be... You just have to nudge him awake. If you started talking to
the
puppet...
Maybe what you'd end up with is you'd have to attach little sticks to the puppeteer so that when the puppeteer was asleep, you could operate him as a puppet in order to operate the puppet.
Yeah.
And so you'd get an increasingly complex line of little sticks... Because everyone's asleep being operated as a puppet, which then operates a person, which...
That might happen, but that is, you know, that's not what I'm interested in. I'm interested in which of the many puppets from Splitting Image would you choose to...
Well, because... because it would be the only glimmer of fun or hope on this entire holiday. I just need to pick a figure who I like the idea of.
Yeah. Remember, it's the puppet, not the person.
Yeah.
So, like, often the puppet was quite different than the... Roy Hattersley never really spat in real life.
No.
So, you know, if you think, I'll get Roy Hattersley.
Was there a puppet of Tony Benn?
Yes, there was. Yes, that lady says there was.
I go for Tony Benn because I can do a bad impression of Tony Benn, so I would probably try and push the sound voice of a guy into madness by talking back to Tony Benn in an attempt at Tony Benn's voice.
I think after the end of a 2-week holiday, all of you would be probably quite mad anyway.
Yeah, I think we'd be quite angry at whoever had organised this trip.
This is a good emergency question from Tim Turner. I'm under no obligation to repeat this.
Tim Turner. Like a time turner in Harry Potter. But don't let anybody see you use it.
That surely is the answer to all of the problems. Richard Dawkins claims to have seen... Richard Dawkins claims to have seen dogs doing a 69. What's the worst lie you have ever told to impress people?
The worst lie... Oh, that's not a fun thought road to wander down.
Do you lie a lot? I would find this quite difficult. I don't really lie that much.
No, my mum
could
always...
Not to impress people, anyway.
My mum could always tell when I lied because I would yawn.
Really?
Yeah. It was an odd sort of reaction I had. No, no, I'm just going to hang out with some mates. There's nothing under the bed. There's no schoolwork. I don't do that anymore. No. I was sort of a magical thinker.
Yeah.
In that I will often associate everyday things with like potential fun results. So like any iPhone game I play, the score will be how many pounds I get. And that I will do that 4 or 5 times a day. And yeah. I'm 33. But I'll work. So Boggle is the amount of pounds I'll get per day,
yeah,
forever. And sometimes I'll play it where I get it's just Monday to Friday, or sometimes it's 7 days a week, but I pay tax. And what is so pathetic is that my scores in Boggle are always between 60 and 100. So basically, this is played out in my mind countless thousands of times. Is me ending up making about minimum wage that is either slightly higher and taxed or slightly lower and not taxed. And it's never going to be more than 100. It's never going to be less than 50.
Yeah.
And it's a waste of everyone's time. And lots of things I do are attached to payments I get in per day.
Yeah.
Like if I can hold my breath to the next tube station, that'll mean I get £50 a day.
So you're lying to impress yourself, is what you're saying. Well, you think, oh, I get £50, then where's my £50?
This is a bit like what I was talking about me being the most annoying thing in my life. Because if I spent 1% of the time I have spent equating basic daily tasks with an amount of pounds I get a day... forever, taxed or untaxed, sometimes Monday to Friday. If I spent 1% of the time I spent doing that working on things that will earn me money in the world that exists,
yeah,
I would earn a lot of money.
Yeah.
But I don't do that. Anyway, so that wasn't at all your question, was it?
Oh, kind of.
The lies. I once said at school that when the ice cream man came around to my house, because he'd park outside, we had a system, and if I let the blinds up... it would mean that I was going to come and get an ice cream. If I had the blinds down, it would mean I wasn't going to get an ice cream. And if the blinds were halfway, it meant I wasn't sure if I was going to get an ice cream. And I thought that if this rumour caught on, that people would think I was cool because me and the ice cream guy had a thing. And which is a pointless lie, because what happened was the ice cream man came around and the blinds were as they were. He was unaware of this fantasy world I'd created, yeah, in an attempt to win favour with the girls at school. As if they were going to go, hey, there's John Robbins. Did you hear about what he's got going on at the ice cream man? Yeah, he's really cool since I heard about this, because he's got a system with the blinds in his mum's living room, whereby there's three different messages he can send out to the ice cream man. Yeah, let's kiss him next.
One of the messages is, I don't know whether I want an ice cream.
which is an entirely pointless thing to say. So it's like he would drive past and go, oh, Robin's on the fence again. Classic, whenever it's warm but overcast, he cannot make up his mind.
If you were the Prime Minister, would you use nuclear weapons?
For what?
Well, nuclear weapons.
Well, they'd be the ultimate sort of retro thing in a sort of a London gastropub, wouldn't they? You could use them as long seats, or you could serve a poached egg on one. That would be quite funny.
On a live nuclear missile. And you know, the egg could be cooked on the nuclear missile.
Yeah. I would never use nuclear weapons.
Never?
No.
What if there were nuclear weapons coming over already?
Well then, but why? So, okay, so if nuclear weapons are coming to hit the country, we're all going to die.
Yeah.
So how is that made better by a lot of other people then dying?
I agree with that. So I've made that similar point. But what if the other people were going to send a nuclear weapon, but they wouldn't do if you said you were going to use nuclear weapons?
So then that's not would you use nuclear weapons, it's would you say you would use, which is this ludicrous, if you back engineer that, then you can just keep saying, well, I would say that I would say that I would say that I would say I would use nuclear weapons.
Yeah.
I wouldn't use them.
I wouldn't use them either. I'd either use all of them or wouldn't use them.
I'd get rid of them, keep the money, and say we've still got them.
Yeah. So I think that as well.
Idiots.
Yeah.
Sometimes, Richard, I think it's people like you and me that should be the politicians. If it weren't for all the terrible errors we would make.
And when they go,
can
we come round and have a look at the missiles? You go, yes. Quick, make
Rich,
someone out of cardboard.
Quick, put the blinds halfway up. If the blinds are halfway up, we're not sure whether we're going to use nuclear weapons. Hey, me and can I ask you a hypothetical question?
Yeah, please do.
Because me and Ellis had one on our that came up on our radio show, and you're welcome to use it if you think it's of interest.
Okay.
But
I'll get my pen out, and then if I write it down, it's good. If I don't write it down, it's not good.
Was there a famous sort of mogul who used to do that? Is that based on a...
No, so, just my own cruelty.
Which would you rather have?
Yeah.
£100,000 in your bank account tomorrow, and that's yours to do with whatever you want.
£100,000 extra on top of the lot I've got in there already.
Yeah. Yeah, you're not going to...
Because I'm not taking that much of a hit.
You can gain £100,000 net tomorrow, and that's yours forever, do with as you wish. Okay. Or you can have £1 million in 50 p's in a silo, like a grain silo, and you are not allowed to pay them into a bank account, change them up, change them into another currency, or invest them in anything. You have to spend them in the form of 50 p's. But you can spend them on anything you want forever.
Yeah.
Which would you rather have?
And do I have to go to the silo every time I want to buy? Is the silo conveniently placed?
The silo's convenient. I mean, it's not walkable. But then you wouldn't want... You would take your car, because you're going to take like a lot out at a time.
Yeah.
And you also... You are not allowed... You are allowed, actually, to pay people to bag them up into little those £20 things, but you're not allowed to pay. You're not allowed to then pay them in anywhere.
Okay.
So the maximum you can have in any one go is £20 of them, but you could pay with like five of those for something that was £100.
Yeah. I think people would still. I mean, if you went to buy a Ferrari, I think they would still take the money.
Well, no, it's not legal tender.
But I think they would still take it
over a certain amount
because they can bank it, can't they?
Yeah.
I mean, I think they'd be annoyed, but there are weighing machines now and stuff you can use, so you can just go and...
But it would take all day.
Yeah, but they would still have sold a Ferrari.
Yeah, okay, so yeah.
So, you know, that's...
Is that a light going?
Yeah, a light bulb just went... When they're all gone, we die. That's...
Take Me Out? Which I've never seen. I'm guessing that's what happens. Is that what Take Me Out is? An increasingly badly lit discussion on a stage?
I think I would take the million.
You'd take the million in 50p's?
Yeah. Because I reckon, you know, I'd be happy. I do a lot of work for charity, and I count up coins all the time.
So how much?
That's what I do. Well, admittedly, not in that volume, but at the end of a gig, I'll go and bag up 50p.
So if you wanted to buy a Ferrari, say it's 150 grand.
Yeah, I don't want to buy a Ferrari, but if I wanted to, that's still more than 100 grand.
So that you can put them into 20 pound.
£10 or 50p.
That's like 60,000 of those little bags.
Yeah.
And then the awkwardness of them telling you to fuck off when you turn up at a really high-end Ferrari dealer.
What if I say I'll give you £200,000 worth of 50p for this £100,000?
But they would assume, I think, that the 50p were counterfeit, and they would have to check each individual 50p somehow.
I'd just say, take a bag at random out of my silo.
Okay.
Come to my silo. I'll show you the 50p.
Okay.
I think it'd still be. I just quite like to have that amount of 50p. It'd be useful for parking meters and stuff.
Yeah, it would be a talking point. You could then sort of move to where the silo was. You could move your house around it.
And what if I sold the silo for £500,000 to someone else?
No, you're not allowed to sell. You're not allowed to in any way change how the money exists.
But what about the silo, right? That's got to be on some land.
Well, if it's
near to where I live in Shepherd's Bush.
You can sell the silo.
That's still going to be worth like £100,000 anyway. So I could just empty out the silo.
But it isn't. Because the silo is in Kent and is on a bad railway line that which has got a bad reputation.
So, like, a train's going to crash into the silo at any point.
Well, when word gets out that there's £1 million in 50p, you're also going to have to pay security.
I'm not going to write the question down.
It's a good question, I think.
It is a good question, but, we've covered it. Have you ever seen a ghost?
No. I once, when I was in scouts, I was the sixer. So I was in charge of my scout six.
Yeah.
And
so far, this is a long way away from answering the question.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that. I'm hoping it's going to become more relevant.
Well,
I've just been wanting to get this into the interview.
Arcana.
I was a sixer when I was at Cubs, all right? And there hasn't been a question I've managed to get that into yet.
And I demand respect. And Arcala and Bagheera and Shere Khan would always tell us ghost stories.
Yeah.
So I once told a ghost story on a night hike to my six about a wolf man who lived in a hut in the wood that we were in to try and scare them. And I got so scared that they had to call my mum to pick me up from the night hike because I'd scared myself with a story I had invented. But no, I've never seen a ghost.
No, okay. Well, it's been lovely talking to you, and thank you for coming along. Thank you for the emergency question. I would definitely use again. Don't bother listening to the others, just in case. Are you touring your last Edinburgh show? Do you tour, or is the Edinburgh show's coming?
I'm sort of looking into it. A few things I was intending to do this year have not been possible, so we might be putting a tour in. Definitely. Things are going really well.
but we can hear them online. Hopefully the new show will be online as well soon.
Yeah, on Bandcamp, johnrobbins.bandcamp.com. And you can also download me and Ellis's podcast from iTunes.
From XFM.
Radio X.
Or listen on XFM.
Yeah, or listen on
No one does that anymore, do they? No one listens. I suppose with breakfast shows, people listen to breakfast shows when they're...
I think we do... We've done 90 shows now, and we've got... People do listen live.
That's good news.
What?
It's good news that people are listening.
Yeah, people...
Must be nice.
We've definitely at least got 12 people that listen. But the podcast is quite...
When I was on FUBAR Radio, I don't think anyone was listening.
Hey, what's going on with FUBAR?
I don't know.
I'm obsessed with it.
I'm amazed it's still going. But we have discussed this.
Have you? Because they don't charge anymore.
No.
So their income must be zero. Which is fascinating.
Yeah, I don't understand. I really genuinely thought they wouldn't last the year out.
Yeah.
And that was a couple of years ago, so... Who knows?
Anyway, so what, sorry, I don't
XFM
want to end
doing
on,
all right? The XFM.
It's called. We're not allowed to call it XFM anymore. We get in trouble.
Oh, is it because
it's Radio
X for men?
Now.
It's only for men.
Yeah,
men
it's just
to
for dudes.
Yeah.
No chicks allowed. Actually. And it's just very dude heavy. At the it's just Yorkie bars everywhere, and packets of McCoy's crisps, and like Gillette razors, and porn, but only like really no tasteful porn. Just the sort of stuff that, like, if your girlfriend found you'd be like, whoa. No, it's exactly the same as it was. It just happened that a rather cynical marketing memo that all companies have got made public, which you probably shouldn't have done. But, you know, we think girls are good too.
They're allowed to listen, but they just choose not to after that memo got leaked. We've had to go, but sorry, it's ended on a bit of a downer. We should have ended after the Sixer story. And, you know, in a way we can do that.
But can you sort of, without it making too much sense, just keep in the plugs for my Bandcamp page?
We can. No, we'll keep it all in.
And Radio
we'll
X.
Keep it all in. It's nice. The embarrassing moments are what makes the non-embarrassing moments seem quite good. In hindsight, people go, you know, there was a bit embarrassing at the end, but most of it wasn't embarrassing at all. So
that's a very good motto for life.
It is. Ladies and gentlemen, it's John Robbins. Thank you. You have been listening to Richard Herring's Let's Square the Podcast with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, John Robbins. The music is by Pest. We have to thank everyone at the Leicester Square Theatre, everyone at iTunes. Let's not forget about them and all the other platforms that this goes out on, legally and illegally. Everyone at RSS, don't even know what that means. Everyone at GoFasterStripe.com. Did I say everyone at Leicester Square Theatre? Yeah, probably did. It is produced by Dave Cripp. It is a Fuzz and GoFasterStripe.com, and also a Sky Potato production. Thanks very much for listening. If you've enjoyed this, please go to GoFasterStripe.com, buy a DVD. If you want me to get some money, buy a badge. If you want to put some money into making more podcasts, yeah, it has to be one of my DVDs if you want me to get any money from it. I don't get any money from all the other people's, but you should buy some of their stuff as well. There's some awesome stuff at GoFasterStripe.com. Thanks for listening. Tell your friends about the podcast if you can be asked. Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Thanks for listening. Go to GoFasterStripe.com for all your Richard Herring download and book needs. Go to RichardHerring.com/gigs to find out if Can I Have My Ball Back is coming near to you. And please listen to as many podcasts on this feed as you possibly can. And make your family and friends and children and strangers, make them listen too. Do get consent from everyone before you make them listen, though. All right, thanks for listening. Go and listen to another one. Bye-bye.